I'm a spaceman. The moon and sun and all the stars are great big Tootsie Roll Pops.
I'm a princess.
Yes, my lord, it's a party tonight. We'll have Tootsie Roll Pops. All of the kids in the neighborhood say Tootsie Roll Pops are triple good. Triple good.
And do you know why?
Sure, because one, there's good tasting hard candy outside. And two, there's a delicious center of Tootsie Roll inside. And three, only Tootsie Roll Pops are said fun to eat. That's why they're triple good.
And don't forget, Tootsie Roll Pops come in a party pack, too. 10 pops in assorted flavors. There's a game on the back that's lots of fun to do.
All of the kids in the neighborhood say Tootsie Roll Pops are triple good. Triple good.
You'll love Tootsie Roll Pops.
Welcome back to the Avram Rosenzweig Show. It's great to be here. My name is Avram Rosenzweig, which works quite well for the title. And in the background is my dear friend Paul Redley, who is my guest today. We'll talk about him in a moment, but let me say welcome, Paul. How are you?
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Avram.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. It's a pleasure. The Avram Rosenzweig Show is a follow-up to Hat Radio. If you were listening to my other podcast, you'll know that there's nothing more that I like than to have wonderful, what we call schmoozes, with people, regular folk, if you will, about life. And the reason I do that is because I think that we are all more similar than we possibly know. And therefore, when you listen to a talk, of which I call a schmooze, as you will with Paul and I, you may listen and say, oh, that's really interesting. Me too. That's how I feel about life as well. Or I never quite saw that perspective. You know, I really believe that we don't take enough time to get to know the other. And I frequently talk about, you know, walking through the line at Metro or No Frills or Sobeys, wherever you shop, and having a short discussion with the woman or man behind the cash. Getting to know them a little bit. It's a talent. It's an art. And if you can do it really quickly, you can have something really substantial in 30 seconds. I have gotten to know the women, or it's mostly women, across the street from my home at Metro, simply by having those very short discussions, probably once or twice a week for the last 2-3 years. I can't even tell you their names. I don't even know what their name is, but I do know that they're fascinating. So I can walk through the line and go, hey, it's great to see you. How are you doing? They go, yeah, it's good to see you too. I go, oh, how's your mom's phlebitis? Is it still acting up? You know, how are your kids? There's one woman, she's Italian and she's a marvelous cook. She's real feisty. She's kind of like that, almost like a closet racist, but a very nice racist, you know? And you know the type, right, Paul?
Absolutely.
You know, they make a joke about a Jew, but they're like, oh, you know, my best friends are Jews, you know. But I'm talking to her, and she's telling me about her cooking. She used to own a restaurant, and she'll tell me all about these Italian meals that she can create. And she'll look at my groceries, and she'll comment on it, especially if I have tomato sauce and lots of vegetables for my son, who's a vegan. So the point that I'm trying to make here is talk to strangers. We were brought up on the adage, don't you talk to strangers, Paul Redley. You stay away from those strangers, right? Truth of the matter is nonsense, man. You should speak to those strangers.
Agreed.
Get to know them. Do you do that, Paul? Do you speak to strangers?
100% of the times at every opportunity, Avram. I love it. I love the reaction that they always give you a second look, like, excuse me, talking to me?
Right, exactly. Okay, does anything jump out at you? Any discussion you've had with someone at your supermarket or at the gas station? You just took your car in. Anything happened there?
Every day. I mean, I've got this. I think it's a good habit. I always say the name of the people that, because they always, you go to the beer store, the liquor store, grocery store, whatever. They always have their name tag. So the other day I was at the LCBO here in Ajax, and this gentleman in front of me let this lady behind me in because she had a lot of bottles.
Hmm.
which was nice. So the lady said, "Oh, thank you very much." And then she went ahead and she paid. And on the way out, she called the teller back. And she says something to the teller. And then when it was my turn to go and pay, the lady started crying. And I said, "Well, what's the matter?" And he said, "The lady called me back," and I said, she said, it wouldn't hurt you to put a smile on your face, bitch."
Oh, you're kidding.
I swear, I
Oh,
couldn't
my
believe
God.
it.
Oh.
So I said, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I'll paraphrase. I said, "Well, I guess she's having a bad day."
I guess so.
So, to ease her pain, when it came time to pay, I took out my money, my $20, and I put it inside the Interact machine.
These are crazy things that go on out there, man.
Yeah, she looked at me and she goes, "Thank you so much." And
Thank
she
you so
smiled,
much. I do,
paid and left.
yeah, I do that sometimes, by the way. You see, like, people are very morose and they're walking with their heads down. And that happens in downtown Toronto. It doesn't happen up here where I live so much. I find that downtown Toronto is just not conducive to, I don't know, a happy character. I know that's a brushstroke statement, but, and I'll often look at people and go, "Yeah, how you doing? You know, so nice to see you." Then I go, "I'm not leaving till you put a smile on your face." Sometimes they get really upset with me. They don't like it, you know. Russian guys don't like
I'm not familiar with too many Russian guys, but
that. Right. So I went into a store here with my son, and a guy was, "Did you buy lottery tickets at all?"
every
Yeah, dude.
store.
It's called the taxation of the stupid. Anyways,
Guilty.
what a way to introduce my guest. So I see a guy and he's filling out, you know, Lotario, and I said to him, "Oh, do you ever win?" And he gives me this look, Paul, you know.
Russian?
Yeah, Russian, yeah. I love Russians, but they can be tough too, you know.
Okay.
And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry to bother you." My son hid behind me, you know. But let me explain to our listeners who you are. Paul Redley is a dear friend of mine. He's been a friend of mine for many, many years. A very generous of spirit, man. Very generous of spirit. He's helped me find places to live in. You are. You look, man, there's a handful of people out there that go out of their way for others when they know that they need something and they'll help them with it sincerely. You're one of those people.
I'm not going to cry.
No, don't cry. Oh, you're a crier, aren't you?
Oh,
I
shut
know.
up. You promised me. You promised me you
You're
wouldn't make
a
me cry.
crier. Dab your eyes, dear. Dab your eyes. Paul is Paul and I. We share something incredibly important. Not only our love for one another and our history, but we are both PKs.
Preacher's kids.
We are both preachers' kids.
Exactly.
In Paul's case, his father was a minister. And of course, in my case, I come from the better, the rabbi. No, I'm kidding. Although
Original
you
one.
you're part Jewish too, aren't you?
Well, that's a good story. My mother, her mother, her name was Lapuna Liscum. She was a Syrian Jew, and for an odd reason, I'm not sure why. I didn't know why back then, but now I do. In my house was like a Menachem David and a mezuzah, and she sent me to Philadelphia, the shul. And at the shul, she said, "Make sure you get the Tanakh." I
Oh.
goes, "Well, Tanakh, what is that, a sandwich?" Or
Yeah, right, with mustard on it. Yeah.
yeah. So I went to Philadelphia at 21, and I got this scroll written, I guess, the Old Testament Tanakh, and brought it back. And there was something about my mother. I never, she passed away, she died, but I never knew the seriousness of her. I've never been bar mitzvahs or anything, but I never knew her connection in Judaism. But after her passing, I realized that, like in Jamaica, like there's a lot of shuls
Yeah.
from back in the 1800s,
Correct. Yes.
some of the original ones. And I'm not sure if they're all Syrian or where they came from, but because of that, I've always had an endearing feeling towards the Jewish people.
Do you feel like a Christian? Do you feel like a Jew? Do you feel like
No,
all the above?
no. Good question. I understand Judaism. I understand the struggles. I've read the Tanakh. I've read the Old Testament many times and the New. I've been to shul almost as much as I've been to church for bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvah, weddings, shivas, all kinds of Jewish celebrations. I've sat under the sukkah many times with
Yeah,
friends.
that's cool.
So it's a part of me, but I really can't, I don't know how to explain it. I'm a Christian. I believe in Christ and I believe in the afterlife and I believe in God. Someone asked me, what religion are you? I answered them, I don't have a religion. I just have faith.
Good, good. So we're going to touch on that a little bit more as we go forward. The idea of being a priest, a minister's son or a rabbi's son. That to me is absolutely fascinating. I also printed up some studies on it. People have studied as Paul.
It's not going to be a test, is there?
There might be. Yeah, there might
Oh,
be. But I'm sure you'll pass well.
okay.
Also, Paul, let me tell you a bit more about him. Born in Jamaica and came over here when he was only 11 years old. As I said, his father was John Alfred Redley, who was a minister. He was a controller, really, by career, right?
Yeah, it was a controller at a company called Allen Industries that made the inside of Bricklin cars.
Well, I love these part-time ministers, though. I love that. They work so hard.
Avram, I mean, my father, if you put him on a totem pole,
Yeah.
he would be at the very bottom because he's the guy that's lifting everybody up.
That's a nice way to
Like
say it.
he is, but yeah, he's like he's. I wish I could, before I die, to be one tenth of him.
That's
I
a
mean,
beautiful thing to say.
yeah, he was a huge man in my life, very big inspiration, and I miss him dearly, and I still love him to death.
Yeah, he died in
2001.
2001. Paul's a father of two beautiful girls. He runs a mortgage company. Just to go back to your dad, I really want to focus on that. I'm working through a lot of stuff having to do with my dad in therapy right now at 62 years old. And you're 67. Would you say by and large you're pretty healthy in terms of your relationship or what was your relationship with your dad? Or is it neurotic at all? Or what?
My relationship with my father was unlike any other relationship with a father-son of my friends that I speak to. We were very close. I respected him. One of my earliest memories was when we moved to Canada. I thought I was going to die because all my friends in school, when I left Jamaica, said, there's this thing called snow. And when you get off the plane, the snow will kill you. I didn't know why my parents wanted me dead. But anyway, that's another story. So when we went to church, Bethany Gospel Chapel in downtown Hamilton, and my father, they allowed my father to sing. And when he got up and he started to bring what we call in Baptist church praise and worship, which is before the sermon,
Yes.
you sing a song. And all this, there's an old church, and all the stained glass started to shake and shatter. So the custodian ran up and put the mic away from him because his voice was so resonating.
Oh, well.
I mean, this man could sit down, he could listen to a song, never took a music lesson in his life. He could sit down at a piano, and we had two in our house, and all he has to do is listen to a song once, and he'll play it note for note.
Isn't that incredible? Do you have that?
No. I
Like,
can't sing a note.
you can't sing?
I play guitar. I don't
Oh, you
sing.
play guitar. That's right. Yeah. So I just want to get an image of your father. How tall was he?
My dad was I'm 5'11". My dad was about 5'10", 5'10" and
5'10".
a half. Yeah, he was he had always had three jobs in addition to being a minister. He worked during the day at Allen Industries as a comptroller. And then on Saturdays, he went out and sold something called Fuller Brush, which is like an Amway thing.
Sure, I remember that.
And then when he finished that, he would go and be a security guard at Pinkerton, which is, I guess, watch close the factories. And then on Sunday, he would go to church and he'd minister to the people. And then he would go to various churches around Southern Ontario and Jamaica. And then he would always take me because I was the trumpet player of the family, and I played accordion as well. I hated it. I
Well, every family should have a
hated
trauma player, you know, everyone. Well, he used to take you to the jails, right?
Hey, you want to hear a great story? This
Yeah.
one
I have a
is
jail story for you too, yeah.
I'll keep mine short.
Okay.
He used to go to the jails in Hamilton and minister to the inmates. And he was the only minister that could actually walk into where the prisoners were. So we got a call at the house and he rushed out. We didn't know what was going on. Later on, we found out that, and this is from the newspaper because the mayor later on gave him a key to Hamilton. He went to the jail. The jail guards went into the common area and the prisoners took them because they said they want food and they want more outside time. They had shifts to the guards' necks and everything. So my dad walked, I'm going to cry again. My dad walked in and
That's okay, man. That's okay.
slapped their hands and put the knives away and then
Wow.
told them, "You get over there," and he's got a deep voice, right? "Put all the chairs in a circle. Guards, get out of here. Lock the gate." The
Yeah.
guards all ran out, and he got all of them in a circle. And all the prisoners held hands and administered to them.
A lovely
And
story.
yeah, and he found what they wanted. Like then he negotiated back and forth with the jail. They want like more bread or more soup or whatever.
Do you find, Paul, that there's a richness to who you are that your friends didn't have because of such stories, because of such events, because of who your dad was?
Avram, I mean, you've got the same similar stories, I'm sure. My father, the stories that, not the story, the what I witnessed with my dad was how to be humble. I've seen him pull a kid from the bottom of a pool, from drowning and then walked away twice. He wants no gratitude, no thank you, nothing. He is just humble. So I and myself, I believe that I got that from him. I'm a humble guy. I mean, I'm not worried about stuff unless that's not in my control. So I'm a very humble person because of my father, if that
Are
answers
you, would you say you're a good person by and large?
your question. By and large, I have a very big problem, and that is I've never grown up.
Well,
I swear to
welcome
God.
home. Welcome home.
I think I'm a teenager still. I don't have that grown-up attitude because my dad was a kidder, right? My dad would make jokes and he's a funny guy and he's loving and he's there for you. But I see people that are, my age or 10 years younger and they're crawling and they're unhappy.
Yes.
Me, I'm happy.
You are, man. You're full of life. You really are. You're vivacious, Paul Redley. You're just full of life. You're bursting at the seams. I just wanted to tell you quickly, we're talking about PKs, you know, preachers, kids, of which both of us are. My father was a rabbi, your father was a minister. My guest, I just want to repeat, is Paul Redley, who's an old friend of mine, and he is someone who I like very, very much, possibly because we share that, possibly because we understand each other. You know, when you come into a room with a clergyman or a clergywoman's child, very quickly you figure that out, right?
We do.
And you know why that is, Paul, and tell me if you agree with me or not. We were trained, every child's trained on something. We were trained to be cognizant, to be aware of the other person in the room's needs.
Empathy. 100%.
Is that right?
It's
Empathy.
empathy.
Yeah. Now, on sometimes that causes problems, right?
For
Because
who? For
well,
them or for
it
us?
caused a lot of problems for me because I would care too much about others and I would forget myself. Did you have that at all?
I still do.
You still do. How does that work? How does that play out?
You want to go deep. Okay. My ex-wife would say that I have two lives. I have a 9 to 5 and an after five life. What I got from that is from 9 to 5, it's all business. It's all mortgages, it's all financing, and it's all math. There are no feelings. But after five, and weekends, of course, when I meet people, I actually can look in someone's eyes and feel what they're feeling. And if they're feeling joy, I feel the joy. If they're feeling pain, I feel the pain. And I have to be careful because I told you I'm a kid. I've got to be careful to come right out and say, "Hey, what's wrong? Why are you feeling that way?"
Yeah, how you doing, right? You don't look so great. Yeah.
That's
right.
You
That's right.
can't be too, you can't be too honest.
Yeah.
You have to play this game to get to the point where you want to be.
So I experienced a lot of that. My four sisters, unfortunately, one of them passed away, but my four
Sorry.
sisters, yeah, I think I told you my sister Naomi died. Yeah.
Yes, she did.
So it sucks when you lose a sibling, huh? You did too.
My sister Paulette, she was my everyone. She was a year older than me, but everyone thought we were twins because her name was Paulette and my name was Paul.
Paul and Paula. It's a terrible thing. But anyway, so we all were trained on that, as I said, and we're all very conscious of other people. I watch my sisters, Paul, when we're together at someone's home, and I watch them how they talk to other people in the room. And I sit there and I go, "Oh man, that's how I do it too." And they're better than I am at it. But constantly, Paul's like, "How you doing? You know, oh, really, that's fascinating. How's your life?" Most people, when you have conversations with them, you'll ask them a question, and then boom, they'll just run with the question, and you just sit there and you nod your head the whole time. If you say something about yourself, they'll bring it back to themselves, right?
Unfortunately.
Right?
Unfortunately, yes.
We're PKs. I like that term. We're PKs. It's like we're trained to listen. We're trained to hear. So while you and I are not ministers or rabbis, people often tell me, they go, "You know, Avram, you seem like a rabbi." Do people tell you that? You seem like a minister?
Like a minister, they said I should go into ministering. I
Yeah.
get that a lot.
Yeah.
First time, whenever I met you, I'm going to tell a little story that you may cut out, but I knew you before you. I knew you before I knew you. Why?
You were stalking me, were you?
No. But it was you and Marty.
Yeah.
I went into a Jamaican restaurant called Albert's, and there's just two Jewish guys on the wall. And I asked Albert about these two guys. He goes, and they told me about Marty and Avram. And then later on, of course, we lived in the same neighborhood. But I used to watch you a lot when we used to hang out outside or inside. And you would always, whenever people came to us, especially the people that live beside you would always stop and listen to them, but you would never judge them, right? And they look at you that way, and they look at you and go, "I think he cares about what I'm gonna say. This guy's gonna listen to what I'm gonna say." And then you would just sit there and listen to them and don't make any judgments, just like you said, "Oh, and how did that make you feel?" That kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I do that a lot. I've been doing that since I'm little. I remember when I was in kindergarten, I think the very first day, there was a little girl crying. I think she was in everybody's class. You probably had a little girl crying too. And I went over and I put my arm around her. You know, and I'm not saying that, by the way, for any to be arrogant at all. I'm saying it to express that this is how we were brought up. And I will tell you something, Paul, and I wonder if you concur with this. It was onerous. It was difficult. Because I always felt that when I walked into a classroom, that I had to find the kids suffering the most and take care of them, right? Is that right? Your hand is up right now. Yeah. Yeah.
Guilty.
Guilty, right? So listen, I did a little research into ministers' kids or rabbis' kids. I want to tell you a couple of things, okay?
Love to
Yeah,
go.
I think you'll like this. So this is done by Barna. It's a research and resource company out of California, and basically what they do is they focus on the intersection between faith and culture. Very interesting. Barna, Barna. So they write as follows. I'm going to read a couple of things here. Certainly those who have spent their childhood in the front row seat of the sanctuary, you got the imagery, right, are given a unique vantage point of church, for better or for worse. If it's for the worse, one might understand how this could contribute to a total rejection of the faith later on in life, okay? So what they're saying is that there are some PKs who just reject the whole kit and caboodle. Now, yeah. two out of every five pastors, 40%, say their child, age 15 or older, went through a period where they significantly doubted their faith. Did you go through that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Two out of five?
Yeah. Did you ever doubt your faith?
Not at that age, no. Later on I did, but not at that age.
Okay. One-fifth of pastors say this is very accurate of their children, and another 22% say it is somewhat true. This is about the same rate as today's millennials. About 38% of those with a Christian background say they have experienced a similar sense of doubt, okay? Overall, one-third of pastors, 33%, say their child is no longer actively involved in the church, right? One out of three. Yet when it comes to the rejection of Christian identity altogether, the occurrences are even less. When pastors were asked if their children no longer consider themselves to be Christians, only 7% said this was accurate of their kids. That's less than 1 in 10.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow. And 40% went through a period where they significantly doubted their faith. That's PKs. 33% are no longer actively involved in church, just as a synopsis. 7% say they no longer considered themselves to be Christians. Now, here are the top seven reasons pastors believe their kids struggle with faith. 28% unrealistic expectations others place on them. Does that resonate with you?
Unrealistic expectations that others place on them. I'm oblivious to that when I was younger.
Yeah, but when you right.
Yeah, I took it on myself as it's my calling, because I was also a counselor at the Bible camps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would go to on Sundays after church and bring kids to my yard and preach to them at 16.
Oh, wow.
So I was a very faith-based kid.
Yeah.
But how about yourself? Were you always part of the shul?
Listen, the thing is like this, is my father had a shul. He was a rabbi of a shul.
Right.
It was called Beth Jacob Synagogue in Kitchener.
Yeah.
And I was his only son.
Yes.
So I would go to shul, and I was always very rambunctious. And I was running around shul, you know, tearing the place up. Mrs. Brown, who was the sexton, the woman who, you know, watched over the shul, locked it up, made sure it was clean, she was always running after me and the other kids with a broom. You know, you're Rabbi's son. Yeah. You know, she's yelling at me in Yiddish, Achenvei, like, you know, you could do better. Right. So there was a lot of that. Or if there was talking amongst my peer group, very often the members of the synagogue who were sitting in shul on Shabbat or whatever it was would look at me and they go, shh, be quiet. You know, you're the rabbi's son, like that. You know what I mean?
The expectation that they had for you to be better than the other kids, you feel
right.
That you weren't.
Right. Now, Paul, listen to this. 18% why children, you know, give up Christianity, PKs. This is good. I like this. Exposure to the negative aspects of the church. You know the dirt on the congregants.
Oh, boy. That's a big one.
You know the dirt on the congregants. Right? Am I right?
You know who put a nickel in the plate.
Yes.
You know who put $100 in the plate.
You know.
The pastor, we could talk about that family that comes and eats our turkey every Christmas for free. And all they do is give us a damn nickel, but we got a smile.
And it gets dirtier than that, doesn't it? Like, you know who's zooming who in the shul, right? Or in the church.
Oh,
You
yeah.
just
Oh, yeah.
know.
Oh,
Not
yeah.
that your parents didn't tell you the dirt, but you overhear
Of
it.
course we do.
You can't help it.
Because the kids talk.
Kids talk. Yes, they
Of
do. And
course, yeah.
they listen really closely. Now, here's a big one, okay? It doesn't sound like this affected you. 17% of respondents as to why children, gave up their faith said, well, you know why? Because the pastor's too busy for them. He's too busy, or she's too busy. That
So
wasn't
the,
in your, that wasn't in your case, was it?
oh no, oh no, no.
Yeah.
The pastor was too busy. So that means that they had an expectation that the pastor had to give time to them that
Yeah.
they didn't get.
As a parent. As a parent.
As a parent. Oh, right,
Yeah,
yes.
that's what it's saying. Like, you have 250 families, let's say, in the synagogue, all right? Or in the
Yeah,
church.
yeah, yeah.
That's a lot of people to tend to.
That's a
You
lot
come
of
home,
families.
you're bagged when you come home. You don't have a lot of time for your kids.
Yeah, because people don't go to pastors or rabbis and wish them happy birthday. They bring their problems to them and
That's
they want
correct.
them to fix it.
Right. And then
Right?
eventually they start
So
bringing them
you.
to the they start bringing them to the
Yeah.
kids. Yeah. Okay, so
Exactly.
I'm gonna read one final one here.
Yeah.
This is fascinating, I'm sure, to our listeners. 14% faith is not modeled consistently at home. So what they're saying is that the priest or the minister or the rabbi or the imam, they're out there doing their religious and spiritual stuff for others. But when they come home, their ethics or their values are not quite as pristine, if you will. You know what I mean? They're not quite as holy inside as they are outside.
I think the number should be higher. You said 17%?
It's like 17%. Yes. Yes.
I would go as high as 30%.
You think it's higher?
Absolutely, it's higher, in my opinion.
Okay. So here's a very interesting piece. This is written by Jewish Action. They did a study on PK's children's, in particular rabbis' kids. And they have, like, I think, six different reasons how to raise happy rabbinic children. You want to hear a couple?
Please, yes.
Okay. Being that you're raising happy rabbinic children, I know
Yeah.
how important this is to you. You like
Wow.
this? You like this Jewish road I'm taking you down?
I love it. I learned the
Yeah, that's why people won't do a second interview. Yeah,
language.
Avram, you want to turn me into a Jew, don't you? I go, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
I'm
Okay.
halfway there.
All right, my dear friend Paul Redley, mortgage broker. Here's a couple things to raise your rabbinic children happily, okay?
Okay.
Make sure your children know that they are number one in your life.
Perfect.
Was that like that in your family?
No. I like my father worked so much we never saw him. We came home for lunch alone. My mom worked at the hospital, so we never saw them. So we really My sisters and brothers brought up, we brought up each other. We didn't have our parents around at all because we're new immigrants. So that one, that's a tough one on my side.
Yeah, your dad was
But
busy, wasn't he?
yeah, three jobs plus being a preacher. Oh, yeah. I
Raising
only
also.
saw him Sunday.
Wow. But wasn't it great to see him?
I loved it.
Right?
Because that we had a big dinner and we stayed dressed up after church in our pristine suits, and we had conversations around on Sundays. We were together, the whole family was together all day Sunday, every week.
Oh, I remember when you were a kid and your father would concentrate on you, or you'd throw the ball around with your dad and it was just you and him. Do you remember how special that was?
Yes. A special thing, I'll never forget those days when he used to take me to a place we called Ochos Rios in Jamaica. And we go swimming on Sundays after dinner or something and just hang out there, or go to the farm and eat fresh food. With my father, we spent a lot of good times together there. I guess he's making up for not being around for the other 5 days.
Yes, that's right. I can only imagine how your dad must have felt not having more time for you and your siblings. It must have been difficult. Because, I mean, we're parents, you and I. You and I are parents.
Yeah, exactly.
I give a lot of time to my son. I'm going to guess you give a lot of time to your girls.
Every second I can.
Okay. All right, here's another thing. Let your adolescent discover his or her own unique spark. I like that a lot. I like that one. Find their own unique spark. In other words, when your kid is growing up, you have a rabbinical home, you have a minister's home. Just make sure that your child, you encourage your child to be in touch with their gift, with their spark.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Their uniqueness. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
their
see that.
uniqueness.
Yeah, I just actually that's the way you put that right now. I do that with my daughters. I encourage their uniqueness that they have. And we do that through communication. So that's a big one.
Well, what would be unique about your two girls?
My the youngest, Ella Grace, the 7-year-old, her uniqueness is communication.
Huh?
Like she will not communicate at school or communicate with her mom, but when her and I are together, it's nonstop communicating about things. But and because she's 7, it's always about her feelings, about what
Yes.
happened with a kid in school and in the playground or whatever. With Emma, her uniqueness is more like what I am. She will listen. She's the listener. She's, oh yeah, and then what happened, Dad?
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh really? And how do you think that made them feel?
Yes.
She pull an Abram on me.
Yeah. So do the two girls have great conversations? Do you overhear them?
Together, yes, they have lately, of course, because the reason they're a lot closer now than they were before, and I
What?
really enjoy seeing them.
Sorry, I cut
Sorry?
you. I cut you off there. Sorry.
No, I'm saying that they're a lot closer now within the last year and a half
Yeah.
than they were before.
Well, I'm the father of one boy. He's 16 years old. He too is rambunctious. He's taking boxing right now. My first interview on the Avram Rosenzweig show was with his boxing coach, Stefan Boyd, Jamaican
You heard
too.
that?
Yeah, and he.
I heard that.
So my son walks around the apartment, punching me in the shoulder. And
Yeah.
because he has more technique now and he's stronger, he works out a lot, he plays hockey. There's a lot of authority behind those punches. So we do roughhousing. We do a lot of roughhousing. So I always wondered, like, what is it like to raise two girls? Are you good at
Yeah,
raising girls? Are you good at it?
I couldn't do. I'm sure Noah is one of the is the greatest kid on earth,
Yeah.
but honestly, I could not raise his son.
You
But
don't
I
think
guess I could if I had to. No, I don't. I don't think I raising the girls because I'm more empathetic and I'm more about feelings, you know. And I'm not a, that. I don't think I'm that dad that would, you know. Jump on a bicycle with my son and, you know, do a 10K ride or play hockey or basketball or that kind of stuff. I'm not that kind of a dad. I'm the kind of dad that like would draw pictures or read a book or
I'm going to guess you're a marvelous father. I really am.
I don't know. I hope I am.
Oh, I think you are, man. You're such a sensitive human being. You're such a decent fellow, and you're so interesting. I mean, you're so colorful.
Thank you.
You are, man. So
I'm
listen,
boring.
I want to jump over to something else. Okay, listen to this poem, or at least part of a poem. It's written by a caregiver, a nurse from Jamaica, because I'm always fascinated by Jamaicans' passion for Jamaica, and I want to ask you a few questions on that. It's called Beautiful Jamaica. Beautiful Jamaica, land of my birth, in my heart you will always be the first. My love and loyalty I pledge to you, as your ambassador, I'll be true. No matter where in this world I may go, your love, kindness, dedication, and industry will show. Everything good that is seen in me is a reflection of your vibrant, motherly, warm island sea.
Beautiful.
What is she saying? What is she saying?
First of all, it sounds to me that she's an older Jamaican woman. She's
Yeah.
not a young Jamaican woman. And she's seen the good and the bad in Jamaica, but she's exposing the love she has for the people, the island, the natural beauty it has, and the warmness of its people. The only thing I didn't, I'm surprised she didn't mention is the food. The first thing a Jamaican always talks about is Jamaican food.
I know, it's very true, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very distinct, but let me just read a little bit more. Maybe she'll cover some. Beautiful Jamaica, where champions like Bolt are born.
Yep.
Yeah. With the resilience and power to weather any storm. On the creator, your values and principles rest. Of your children, you expect only the best, nothing less. You inspire them with the values and attitudes with a full heart of love and laughter to change any mood, no matter how times are hard. D-duddy tough, D-duddy. To share with others, there's always enough. And I eat and I eat and I never stop eating. No, I just made that part up. Yeah. Okay, let me ask you some questions about Jamaican food, okay?
Okay.
Breakfast in Jamaica would not be the same without ackee.
Ackee and
What's
saltfish.
what is
Okay.
it?
Ackee and saltfish.
Yeah, what's ackee?
Ackee is a fruit, a yellow fruit with a seed inside it. It looks like a yellow pear,
Yeah.
and it's it resembles egg. Like it resembles scrambled egg. And we eat that for breakfast with saltfish.
Is it nice?
Oh my God, it's my favorite dish.
Is it?
It's my favorite meal.
I love that. Okay. It's not an event. What is festival?
Festival is dough,
Yeah.
wrapped, dough that is wrapped and then sugar poured, is bread with sugar poured on it. And sprinkling inside of saltfish.
Fried sugared cornmeal dough.
Cornmeal dough.
That's what they say it is. Fried sugared cornmeal dough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fried sugar. Yeah. Usually we do festival, we put fish, like saltfish baked inside it.
You're not fat at all, are you?
200 pounds, man.
It ain't a horror, like they say in Yiddish. Well done. Okay. A common dish for special occasions, such as weddings or nine-night ceremonies. What is Manish water? Manish water.
Don't like it. I have no idea. It's
It's
a
goat's head soup. Goat's head soup.
no, no, thank you. I will not eat or drink that.
It awful?
It's terrible. It tastes rotten. I don't know how Jamaicans can eat that. Drink that. It's terrible stuff, man.
Well, listen, in Judaism, part of our culture, on, I don't know if you know this, but on Rosh Hashanah, like the high holidays, we eat a fish head, and my mother would eat it, and it would literally be like a fish head severed from the rest of the fish. Pancreas, my mother made pancreas. She made tongue. Have you ever had tongue?
No, I've never had
Yeah,
tongue.
all those things, you know. And also, we're very big on what are the things called in our digestive system?
Intestines?
Like all that stuff,
That's
yeah.
it. Yeah.
That might be part of the reason for anti-Semitism, you think?
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
They eat that, and they eat that all over the world. I mean, they eat dogs and cats in Thailand.
no, so that's not a good theory. Here is an easy one. Jamaica is famous for jerk. What is it?
Jerk is a very, very spicy sauce
Yes.
that is made up of mostly Scotch bonnet pepper, which grows freely in Jamaica. And we put that on pork, chicken, everything. It's
Do
a very spicy.
you know that process? Do you do that at home?
No, I buy it ready-made from a company called Grace.
Is it awesome?
Oh, I love it. It's
Yeah.
heaven. Oh my God. It just like as soon as you smell it, it reminds me of home.
So do you burp a lot or do you have
Oh
gas?
no. No.
No, eh?
I eat hot sauce every day.
No problem. Can you eat the real hot one?
I'll bring you some hot sauce right now. I make my own hot sauce.
And how hot is it?
It's not ghost hot. It's about 2 or 3 below ghost. It's 100% Scotch bonnet peppers.
And
Mixed
you
with
would.
vinegar and water and basil and peppers, and take the Scotch bonnet and like crush it up, and then almost liquefy it in the vinegar, and then I mix it up with the sauce.
So if you have friends over, and you're having a dish with that on it, and they're having, will you make a special mention of, whoa, this is hot, or will you just keep talking?
Oh no, I just keep talking. It's not, for me, it's not hot. But you know, the funny thing is, I have friends of mine, non-Jamaicans.
Yeah.
When they come over, they say, when I have, you know, like a barbecue, they always put it on their steak, their hamburgers, everything. They love it.
And can they taste the food? That's my problem with hot sauce.
Oh, yeah.
You can't taste the food, you just taste that.
Once you're used to hot sauce, Avram, I'll give you a little tiny bit next time I see you, okay?
Yeah, I can't wait to see you, yeah. Okay, here's a couple more for you, and then we'll wrap up on this. It was not born on a Monday. What is Solomon Gundy?
What is Solomon Gandhi?
Gundy, Solomon Gundy.
No idea.
It's a pickled herring condiment, pickled herring.
Pickled herring?
Yeah.
Jews like pickled herring, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, we do. We love schmaltz herring, marinated herring, anything herring. We'll have it morning, afternoon, and night.
Yeah.
What is stamp and go?
Stamp and go?
Yeah, stamp and go.
Stamp. You know what? I'm not a real Jamaican. I don't know that one.
This is old Jamaican, I guess. Saltfish fritters.
Oh, yeah. That's like a fritter.
Yeah, saltfish fritters. Yeah.
Yeah. It's what I was talking about before, the fritters.
So listen, we covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah, we did. We're almost caught up.
We covered a lot of ground. It was so great talking to you, Paul. I'm so happy that you, you know, you agreed to do this. Thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Avram, the pleasure was all mine. I really enjoyed it. I don't open up to a lot of people, but because of my love for you and my trust for you, I'm happy to make this with you.
Thank you. Thank you. And you just opened up to at least another three people. One is my mother, who died. So my sisters will listen, you know.
My sister makes three.
Put your daughters in front of them. Yeah, we'll build our listenership here.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good. What you're doing with this podcast,
yeah,
well needed.
Thank you.
I'm glad to put it on Podbean too.
Thank you very much. Why is that?
It's easier to navigate as opposed to the Apple Podcast.
Yeah,
Apple Podcast has got so much stuff on it. But with Podbean, it's easy. I guess not because it's new, but you can just focus on what you want. If you want something specifically, you can get it there.
Now, do you want business? Like, do you want to send out your email or phone number or whatever? Do you want to do that?
I'm good. Hey, listen. If you Google my name, Paul Hedley,
yeah.
I'm on the first 10 pages of Google.
Okay. Well, that
anyone can find me.
Redley. I mean, it must be fun to get a mortgage through you, I'm assuming.
Every deal that I've done, I've got friends. Most of my business is repeat business.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do a lot of mostly commercial, but it's all referral. But I love my job.
Because of the people, right?
Yeah, because if I had any other kind of job, then I'd be seeing the same people every day. Whereas right. When I do a deal, it's like I'm creating a canvas. It's like, you know how you feel when you're putting oil on canvas?
Yes.
That's how I feel when I'm doing a mortgage. Because I'm helping somebody or I'm helping a family. And at the end of the day, I can drive by the property and go, you know what? I made that happen. And that makes me feel good.
Oh, so it's inherently meaningful, you're saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Is it? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm helping people.
Okay. See, I would never have thought that about mortgages.
I know. People think mortgages are boring, but I love math.
You do?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, what's 12 times 11?
Oh, boy. 12 12s are 144.
That's all.
Ask me what 12 million times 11 million is.
That's how I do it, too. Oh, my God. 12 times 12. Yeah, I'll take off 12. Okay, 133. No, 132.
144. Yeah, exactly.
Folks, if you want to be in touch with me, you can do so at avramrosenzweig.com. That's AVRUMROSENSWEIG.com. I'm also a purpose and meaning coach. Do you know that I do that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And you know how people come to a certain point in their life? You're 68 years old, or you'll be 68. And a lot of times, Paul, people forget their dreams.
Really?
Yeah, what happens is you go through a career, you've been doing mortgages for like 30 years, but let's say you stop doing mortgages tomorrow, okay? You'd have to ask yourself, who's Paul Redley?
Oh my God, that's scary.
It's scary. It is scary.
Oh my God, no.
Right, but you can come to me, Avram Rosenzweig, purpose and meaning coach, and I can help you.
Really?
Well, I'll help you rediscover your dreams. Like I'm sure when you were a kid, you wanted to be a firefighter or a boxer.
How
We'll
the
get, well, yeah, we can get you back there. You can start flying.
Wow. So what you do is you meet with with individuals one on one, either on Zoom or whatever, and you discuss with them their purpose in life and coach them through that.
Very much so. Like I'm a big proponent of. Have you read Viktor Frankl at all? Man's
No.
Search for Meaning.
No.
Okay, so it's one of the biggest selling books of all time.
Okay.
He was in the concentration camp. He was a psychologist. He was right up there with Freud, and he developed a whole thesis, a whole theory called logotherapy. And you know what?
Logotherapy,
Yeah, you
yeah?
know what logotherapy is?
No.
Logotherapy is essentially that if you find your purpose and meaning in life, that in itself will give you the reason to live. That will give you purpose, right? So you're passionate about your mortgages, more so the people and so on. If you decide that, oh wow, I'm going to focus on something that's people oriented, and then you dive into it through a particular channel, that will give you meaning. Logotherapy says find the meaning in your life, and that will be therapeutic in nature, right? He was in the,
L-A-G-O,
pardon me?
L-A-G-O, L-A-G-O therapy,
Lago,
Lago.
L-O, yeah.
Okay.
Viktor Frankl, Frankl. KL, I think. People should
Okay.
read the book. If you haven't read the book, pick it up. You can get it on Amazon. And
Okay.
again, it's one of the best-selling books of all time. It's a fascinating book. And I'm a big believer in that. I talk to people, I go, what are you passionate about? What are your dreams? And if they can find their dreams, Paul, then they can find their purpose in life and they can be happy. They can be happy. They can.
I can see you helping people do that.
Yeah.
That's important.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, so give me a shout. Other than that, it's been a great show. Thank you so much for listening. It's called the Avram Rosenzweig Show. We'll be back next week. You know who I'm going to interview? Hopefully next week.
Oh.
A lovely guy. A lovely guy, Paul. Someone whom you would adore.
Who is
And
this?
his name is Josh Arbus.
Yeah.
And Josh is 23 years old. And Josh has a very, very challenging stutter.
Really?
Yeah. He's got a really challenging stutter. And this kid is the most appreciated kid around.
Wow.
He's so successful. He teaches people things and he's got that gleam in his eye and just a lovely human being. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to bring him on the show and stutter and all and have a talk with him about what that's like, how he's overcome it, what he's done to make his life better. And he said, sure, I'll do that. Yeah.
Avram, I can see that it's amazing that you would take that challenge on.
I want to try it.
It's a big challenge.
I want to try it.
You'll make him comfortable, I'm sure.
I love that kid. He's beautiful. He really is.
I look forward to listening to the show.
If he needs a mortgage, I'll let you know.
At 23,
I'll give you a show.
all right.
But I
All
get
right.
like a kickback or something, you know?
We always do.
All right, folks, make sure to talk with strangers. That's integral in life. You learn a lot when you do. Guard yourself. Some strangers are not worth talking to. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Yeah. Paul Redley's been my guest today, and thank you once again. It's been wonderful. We look forward to being with you again and next week. Have a beautiful one. Be careful. Be safe. And we love you dearly.
We love you too.
I am the Frito-Bandito. I like Fritos corn chips. I love them, I do. I want Fritos corn chips. I'll get them from you.